KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Berkeley.
Berkeley, California.
Right north of the LeConte Street.
Coming up, tunnels channeling water in the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta could soon be a reality that would affect these people.
We're pretty much connected to the water. I'm here because of the river.
Boat culture on the Delta. Then how one Bay Area artist prioritizes emotions in her work.
Being radically vulnerable, and talking about our emotions and being able to empathize and being able to practice being empathetic.
And the International Slam Poetry Playoffs start tomorrow in the Bay Area. What will they sound like?
I am Port Barrow, Louisiana, and the poppy seeds of a southern breeze. I am black from the beginning.
A chorus of voices today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Water is the defining feature of the California Delta, the region just to the east of the Bay Area, between Sacramento and Stockton. It's where Governor Jerry Brown is pushing for massive tunnels to channel water to Southern California. Right now, recreation on the Delta is a big part of the economy and culture of this place. Visitors come for activities like fishing, windsurfing, water skiing, and houseboating. The population just outside the Delta interior has grown significantly over the last 20 years. So it would make sense that the boating and fishing industries would have grown a lot too, but they haven't. From our archives, this is what KALW's Lisa Morehouse discovered when she met a sport fishing guide and a marina owner who know that reality firsthand.
It's 7 a.m. on a Tuesday morning, and a boat named Fishing Fool 4 pulls out of a private dock in the town of Isleton. It's loaded with poles and bait and four avid fishermen.
I'm Barry Cannavaro. I run fish hookers, sport fishing, have for 41 years. I'm a licensed captain with the Coast Guard. I live right here, right in Isleton.
We head down the Sacramento River, into the deep water channel, and under the Rio Vista Bridge, where big ships pass through to the port of Sacramento.
We're gonna go down to what we call a power line. Power lines area, which is down about 5 miles down the river here, and we're gonna fish a combination of striped bass and sturgeon.
Today's cold water makes fish less likely to bite, but Cannavaro uses a sonar device called a fish finder to pick the most promising location.
Well, we're just getting baited up here, and we're on the Alco tides. Well, we're got them all casted out.
And then they wait. Off the side of the boat, sturgeon jump like they're taunting us.
This is a waiting game. It's watching paint dry.
Yeah. It's hours of tedium broken up by moments of sheer panic.
Cannavaro comes from a fishing family. His grandfather, originally from Italy, was a commercial fisherman in nearby Pittsburgh before the salmon fishery dwindled in the 1950s.
We've been in every part of fishing that you can be in. We were manufacturers. We built tackle and sold tackle. And I go out commercially and get bait and to sell to the bait shops. So there isn't a part of the fishing that I haven't done.
In terms of leading fishing trips, Cannavaro says he's seen business go down starting about 10 years ago. And it's gotten a lot worse since the recession.
We used to work every day. And now, you know, you probably work, if you could do 4 days a week, we'd be happy.
If people are saving money, they'll do less recreational fishing. Then there's an added competition for business. Locals who lost their jobs, who used to just fish for fun, have started trying to get some fish guiding work too.
And then the fish are not there like they used to be.
Scientists, conservationists, and state agencies say the fish population has been in decline for decades. That includes threatened and endangered salmon and smelt. Pollution and predator species could be the factors, but for decades, the conclusion of many studies, and the opinion of the guys on this boat, is that the diversion of fresh water out of the Delta hurt fish, both at the pumps and because of the change in water flow. The first dams and canals went up in Northern California in the late 1930s. In the 60s, pumps opened in the South Delta to transport water to the California Aqueduct. Canavaro and his neighbors are worried that the proposed tunnel project, which would start diverting water from the northern part of the Delta, could hurt the fish population even more. And local businesses, from sport fishing guides like Canavaro to hotels, early morning diners, bait shops, and gas stations, they all depend on customers who fish.
It was a fisherman's paradise in the past. And there's a lot less fish. So naturally, with less fish, there's less fishermen.
Candy Korth is sitting outside at the Pirate's Lair Marina, where the McCallamy and San Joaquin Rivers meet. This land has been in her family a long time. Her great-grandfather, originally from Portugal, moved to the Delta after trying his hand at mining during the gold rush. In the 30s, her grandmother and grandfather decided to farm and bought this undeveloped land at the end of the road.
He started establishing himself here by bringing out oil and gas and hay, and when he returned the next day, they were all stolen.
When it happened again, her grandmother said, "All we've got is a pirate's lair," and the name stuck. Korth says this land was tough for her family to farm, and they just happened into the boating industry.
My grandmother personally had a small demasted sailboat that she used to go out on the water herself,
which she would loan out for free to people looking to fish.
And finally, one day, one of the people that wanted to use it insisted on paying her and pressed a silver dollar into her hand. And the light bulb went off.
She convinced her husband to build more boats. Today, the Korth family runs several marinas in the Delta, serving people who love water recreation. People visit the cafe and gift shop in the summer and store boats here year-round for water skiing and fishing.
Another thing that boaters like to do is anchor out and or hang on the hook is the way they call it.
But Korth says business has been slow for marina owners lately. Her records show their gas sales went down 27% between 2007 and 2011, though it's starting to recover. And some people with smaller boats pulled them out of marina berths, storing them at home.
We've had vacancy levels that I've personally never seen in my lifetime.
Almost 25%. So the Korth family offered discounts and promotions, cut back on some capital improvements, and added things like Wi-Fi to stay attractive. Her family's opposed to the tunnels. Even though the state's plan includes water quality regulations, Korth is concerned that too much freshwater diversion will leave the water here too salty for the fish population. But she's not trying to be possessive about the water that drains into the Delta.
I never really think about the water in the Delta as being the Delta's water. It is the state's water. I completely agree. And I understand that a certain amount can be diverted without catastrophic harm, but there is a pressure to continue to divert and possibly to divert more.
Back out on the water, Barry Canavaro shouts to a boat nearby.
Oh, pretty slow.
Yeah, we're gonna go see if we can get a turnaround somewhere else.
Yeah.
They did pretty good at off of Light 34 yesterday on the income.
It's a poignant reminder of how business has changed. That very boat was one of three Canavaro used to own and operate his sport fishing business with. Now he has just this one. And he leaves the Delta for a month or two each summer, leading fishing trips up the coast. People have paid Canavaro to use his boat and expertise for other work. When prices for natural gas were higher, he'd take equipment and workers out to local gas fields. When the Antioch Bridge was under construction, he did the same there. I ask, with so many questions about the future of the Delta, what does he do to plan ahead?
I mean, what are you going to do?
Canavaro's over 70, and he's hoping to cut back, but he's worried about the future of business on the water.
Of course, you know, I live on the water, and everybody that lives, so all my neighbors are on the water. You know, we're pretty much connected to the water. I'm here because of the river. In my case, my family, you know, I'm planning to retire, and my son-in-law is going to take over. Is he going to have anything to take over? You know, is there anything left?
The findings of the state-based Delta Protection Commission seem to substantiate Canavero's concerns. Even though it predicts the population of a dozen counties around the Delta will grow by as much as 50% in the next 40 years, growth in boating recreation is not expected to keep pace. In the Delta, I'm Lisa Morehouse for Cross Currents.
That story was part of Lisa's series exploring the California Delta. You can find the rest of the stories at our website, KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Yetunde Olabaju grew up in Minnesota, but has embedded herself in the Bay Area's creative scene as a multidisciplinary artist and youth arts educator. Her work ranges from video and installation to performance, and often deals with themes of personal memory, ritual, and vulnerability. She sat down with KALW's Jen Chien to talk about building human connections through the practice of art.
Is there a moment you remember when you decided to be an artist?
So I grew up in Minnesota, and I grew up there until I was about 17. And I remember in fourth grade, her name was Rachel Hoffman Dachelet, is my art teacher. And it was the first time that I was working with clay. And I remember in that class, there were a couple of people who, and maybe this is like a weird, like type A little Yetunde moment, but there was a lot of people in the class who like weren't taking it seriously and they were just playing around. And I was like, you guys, like.
In fourth grade.
Yeah, in fourth grade. I was like, you guys, what are you doing? Like, what is this? Like, we need to be taking this seriously. Like, don't you want to be an art? And I think it was one of the first moments where I realized that my own work ethic wasn't necessary. Like, there might be a difference between people who are making artwork as a hobby or people who have decided that this is like a life path for them.
You were taking it seriously.
Yeah, I was taking it weirdly seriously. I was very, like, very anal about it.
So you're now, as an adult, you're a multidisciplinary artist.
Mm-hmm.
You do video and installation, performance, among other things.
Mm-hmm.
So when someone asks you what your art is like, what do you tell them?
I would say that I'm creating environment and recalling memory. So like Christmas last year, I went on residency to Point Arena, California, and I was kind of connecting to this idea of like all of us are having a different human experience, but that there are connecting factors in some of the ways in which we come to the same conclusions, right? So I started to think, like, how does that actually practically on a scientific level translate, like in our bodies? How do we perceive the same thing differently?
Something like color.
Color, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like why people see green flashes on the horizon right at sunset. That's the last color that our eye can perceive because it's our eyes are changing.
It's an actual physiological reason for that.
Exactly. But that's also really magical. Like how magical is that moment where you see a green flash on the horizon? That's insane. I've only met one other person or one person who's actually seen that. That's really magical and can bring up so many feelings for people. So the way that that manifested is that I ended up creating a video piece called I Gave Myself Space to Go Back, Part 2. The first part was just photos, and the second part was an actual film or video where I feel like my intention was to take the different colors that I was thinking a lot about and try and emulate this process of them communicating with each other. I'm realizing now that I'm deeply rooted in being able to tell these stories and being able to feel these things and being able to connect to other people through that process. So I think it's always been kind of like that. Like I'm finding myself always being able to find that thread throughout a lot of my work, even though it could come from a totally different side. But at the end of the day, it always goes back to I'm telling this story. I'm talking about these feelings associated with this story, and I'm trying to orient myself within the human existence through that.
You're going to be a part of this show, The Black Woman is God, at SOMArts, and this project has been going on for some years now. Yeah. For people who are not familiar with the project at all, maybe talk a little bit about what it is and then why it resonates for you to be a part of it.
Absolutely. So the Black Woman is God, I participated in last year, but I think it's been going on for 3 years now, or three iterations, three shows. And it is a project created by Karen Tenefru and Melora Green, who are two really fantastic Black folks out here making opportunity for so many other amazing, beautiful humans out here in the Bay.
So artists and curators.
Yep. Both Karen and Melora are artist curators, which is dope. It's awesome. I just walked in and instantly felt like everybody was... I was at a cookout or something. Like, I was at home or something. There was just...
the community.
It was yeah, it was great. I'm just really proud of everybody. I don't know what else to say about that. It's just...
What does that phrase mean to you?
Black woman is God.
As an artist, as a person?
I think Karen and Melora's intention with it is to say that, like, you know, for a very long time, Black women have been... expected to kind of be subservient and kind of gone under the radar. So I think that that was their intention, is to really celebrate Black women, to celebrate how much Black women have given to their communities and to communities that they may not have wanted to be part of, and how within us are just little gods walking around. I think for me, one of the things that I definitely believe deeply within myself is that all of us are little gods walking around, right? And the ability to create, and the ability to care, and the ability to advocate for other people is close to, if not godliness. And I think that a lot of my thought process goes toward being radically vulnerable, and talking about our emotions, and being able to empathize, and being able to practice being empathetic to other people and with other people, and having that process be transparent.
That was artist Yetunde Olabaju speaking with KALW's Jen Chien. You can check out her work in the group show The Black Woman is God that's at Soma Arts in San Francisco starting today. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. The International Youth Poetry Slam Festival Brave New Voices has come to the Bay Area with 3 days of workshops, town halls, and competitions in Oakland and Berkeley. The Grand Slam takes place Saturday at San Francisco's War Memorial Opera House. That's why all week long we've been playing you poetry from young people in the Youth Speaks program, including this halftime performance at a Golden State Warriors game.
It is 1777. Black resistance pulls a neon mask over his face, drapes himself in feathers, and starts answering to the name Carnival. Runs around Trinidad, burning plantations to the ground, using the sugarcane shards as drumsticks, calls this rhythm religion. It is 1881, and Trinidad bans the use of drums at Carnival. Black Joy is off working on an oil rig when he hears the news for the first time. Looks into the sea to see his reflection, but finds the only valuable black thing to be the oil spilling. Turns oil drum into steel pan and names one note after every auntie. One for every woman who taught him God. It is 2007 and black history looks like my brother. And we drive with the windows down. And we pull up like two trumpet cloud roll back, second coming done came in a Honda Accord. And he calls it the golden whip because big brother's always got cool names for things. Calls me strong, calls me beautiful. And it's the first time a black man says that to me. And suddenly,
we are the music.
We be bass so bursting, the subwoofer howls like a feral dog picking its teeth with white bones. And we hear our history lisping in the hiss of the hi-hat. And for a moment, we rock, and we rock, until the seats be vessel and we ain't drowning no more.
I am a steaming flow of African spice, black burning tongues, Creole to the core. I am a mixture of great grandma Jessie's French vernacular slipping off her tongue in small town Donaldsonville, pride of grandpa. I am Port Barrow, Louisiana, and the poppy seeds of a southern breeze. I am black from the beginning. Basted with brains of AKA and Delta rivalries, I am black, davening with Talit. Black for me is Creole father from hurricane, po' boy popping, French side street country. Black means knowing. I'm headed for multiple destinations where all our bodies are recognized, where the queer mixed alternative beings from the diaspora can communicate and call for recognition, because I am not on the outskirts of soul music and R&B tracks. I am not on the lonely shores of Matasiahu's soul-saving waters. I can rush from Rosh Hashanah services to a Black Lives Matter protest because my Judaism is partnered with my medallion and synagogue. Black power fist raising to Hashem, I am not an outlaw in Israel's eyes, because the Torah knows I'm truthful. And tales of immigrant mothers after World War II tell me to never forget this country's hate, leading battered bodies to the edge of our days. Can't forget how Yiddish tongues and coarse curls have not always been accepted into the American dream. Gotta love every edge and smile and cry rumbling the room, and never beware my melanin.
I break chains all by myself, won't let my freedom run in hell. I'ma keep running, cause a winner don't quit on themselves. Imagine 10 Negroes crouched to the ground as scared as they were silent. More faith in Harriet Tubman than any God Master taught them about. When I think of leading, I see aching black bodies crawling out of slavery's pit. When I think of a leader, I hear black women say she would have freed so many more had they known they were slaves. The greatest leaders do not judge their success by their number of followers. They are worried about who they left behind, and I worry often about the thicker girls trying to stuff themselves in a beautiful's box. So I teach lessons on the mammy role and how it changed the realities for plus-size black women today. I will sing my way to freedom until we can dance out of the shadows. I'm a leader here on platforms I fear are too thin to hold my figure, but I spit anyway, teach anyway, lead anyway. A revolutionary leader can't enjoy freedom knowing there are people still in chains.
You so black, you bright. Skin so dark, it's light. Filled, skilled, inside jaw switch slang, tongue curves like crisscross cornrows, slicker than toothbrush gel baby hair. Dreads hang so low but your chin high. The ash on your knees is an indicator of the fire in your bones. That coarse coil is a protectant for that beautiful brain, housing all the world's ugly truth. Color-coded files for codes to switch based on where, with who, and whom you need to be at any given time. Grand Canyon, round nostrils to smell all the flowers while you still here. We still here. We still carry a rhythm in our teeth. Each grin, a percussion pound to pronounce us present. Black bird, singing in the alive of today. You are alive today. And your ebony will say the same tomorrow. You a funeral funhouse. They walk in expecting death, but we just laugh. Passing out do-rags with the popcorn. Soot sits in the bellies of your toes, the remnants of embered eyes. To live with them wide is to be enraged most of the time with all the flames you see. They should thank you for not burning everything to the ground. Instead, you place that inferno in your thighs to move, no backing down, and continue picking your Afro crown.
Those were Aaliyah Bradshaw, Tovah Ricardo, Tassiana Willis, and Trey Amos performing their original poetry during a Warriors halftime show. The poetry festival Brave New Voices has begun. Find all the information at klw.org. Click Cross Currents. And that's all for today's show. Our team includes Anjali Bhatt, Nina Gensler-Debs, Raquel Gonzalez, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Jesse Rhodes, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, and Andrew Stelzer. James Rollins engineers the show. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley-Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Usually, right about now, we'll tell you about a current Bay Area musician or band. But since this is the 50th anniversary of San Francisco's Summer of Love with its revolutionary impact on popular music, we're doing Throwback Thursdays. And today's music is actually not by a Bay Area band, but how can we remember the Summer of Love without Scott McKenzie's anthem to San Francisco? For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.